Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, listeners. This episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by iTalki, which is a really convenient way to develop your fluency in English by talking to native speakers online. To claim your voucher worth 100 iTalki credits, just go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, I'm talking to my friends Amber and Paul about cultural differences, particularly in the ways that we communicate with each other in different countries. You should know that there is a bit of swearing in this one, as well as a few dodgy jokes and references to previous episodes of the podcast, which you should probably listen to before you listen to this one, in order to understand a couple of those references and in-jokes. The previous episode is number 380. As for the swearing, I see that as just evidence of the fact that we're all talking in a totally relaxed, genuine and natural manner, like we normally do in this social situation. I just want to say also that our aim in this conversation was to compare different cultures and not to criticize other cultures. We're just expressing our own personal experiences from our point of view. Since we all live in France and we're from England, there are quite a lot of comments about differences between French and English culture. And if you're French, I'd love to read your points of view on many of the things that we're talking about, and I'm sure that you could make loads of similar comments about life in England. For example, like, why the hell do we have separate taps in the bathroom in England? Or why do girls go out on a Friday night with hardly any clothes on? Don't they get freezing cold? And why do so many British people drink so much? Now, these are all things that might seem strange to visitors to the UK. So I'm well aware that all cultures and behaviours can seem strange from the outside, and it's all really just a matter of context. In fact, on the subject of culture in the UK, I have already done several podcast episodes all about culture shock experiences of people moving to the UK from foreign countries. So check out those episodes if you haven't heard them already. I'm talking about episodes 192 and 193, which were called Culture Shock Life in London. So I'm sure that you all have points of view on cultural differences that you would like to express. So feel free to leave comments on the page for this episode. And don't forget to join the mailing list on the website to get easy access to the page for every new episode when it's uploaded. So, without any further ado, here is a podcast about cultural differences with Amber and Paul. Amber and Paul are sitting with me. We're on the terrace of my apartment again. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Paul.
Hi.
Hello. Now, I've brought you here because I thought we would... Well, that's not the reason I brought you here. I brought you here because I like you. But also, I thought that we could talk on the podcast today about cultural differences. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've got a little introduction here of sorts. So I hope you don't mind, but I'm now going to go through my rambling introduction. You've seen me do this before.
How long is this? 20 minutes?
It's going to take 300 years.
It's 10 minutes, always.
So, okay, I might bring you in, so... Don't fall asleep.
All right.
Okay, here we go. So, cultural differences. Here's the introduction. Now, although we're all the same, we're all humans, we're also different, aren't we? Here are some ways in which we're the same. We all fall in love. We all go to the loo. We get hungry. We get tired. We like laughing. We listen to Luke's English Podcast. But we're all different as well. Individually, we are all unique. but we're also different as groups, tribes, nationalities, cultures, things like that, right? Now, although it's bad to generalise, it seems that cultures, like ethnicities or nationalities, tend to have certain shared behaviours and customs that mark them out as different to others. For example, although the English and the French share a lot of things in common, there are certain things which mark us out as different. Not just the language we speak, but the way we behave and things that we think are important. Like, for example, the way that we queue. You'll know what I'm talking about, you two.
Uh-huh. Yes.
We do queue differently. I'm going to give you an example. So yesterday I went out to do various odd jobs and I had all sorts of queuing experiences. One, I was in a shop and I was standing in line. And there were three people in front of me. The line was clearly going in one direction. And I neatly put myself in position off, you know, behind the third person. And then some person comes along and they stand pretty much next to me, just behind me, but next to me.
Hmm.
And that really got on my nerves.
That's annoying.
I can't take this because...
But instead of saying anything, you just let it...
No, I'm English, so I didn't say anything. I just stood there just going, I'm not going to say anything, but I'm very annoyed. Because in England, I think we've got quite a strict culture of queuing where everyone knows exactly where they should stand. You stand directly behind the person in front of you and you have a sense of whether the queue is shifting in direction, if it's turning a corner or something. Everyone... Somehow, we've got a collective consciousness in the queue. Whereas here in France, I get the feeling that people are always ready to jump ahead of you.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you get this sense that people behind you are like standing to the side. They're looking over your shoulder. They're waiting for a chance to jump ahead of you. And I almost stand like with my elbows and legs out as if to say, don't get behind me, get behind me, like that. I do find the queuing rules to be a bit different. So anyway, that's just an example of culture shock, I suppose, but it shows that there are cultural differences. Of course there are. Everybody knows. If you've ever been abroad or had contact with other cultures, you'll know sometimes it's just incredibly obvious that our cultures are different. Sometimes it's hilarious, sometimes frustrating, sometimes it's just weird. But we do have to remember that they're just differences, and while they can be confusing or frustrating, ultimately we need to find ways to look beyond these differences and not let them become a barrier to things like communication, understanding, business, diplomacy, sex, and relationships. I just added sex in there just because I needed
to spice it up
a bit. So in this episode, I'd like to have a cultural, I'd like to have a discussion about cultural differences that we've noticed around the world. These could be different, whatever, right? Okay, guys?
Okay, all right then. Cultural differences.
I'd like to establish, Amber and Paul, what your credentials are in terms of your cross-cultural experiences. So, first of all, how long have you two lived in France? You're from England, but how long have you lived in France?
I've lived here 15 years.
Okay, Paul?
7.
Okay, so plenty of years living in another culture. Have you visited many other places? Like, which other places in the world have you visited?
Me?
Yeah.
I've been to Argentina.
Yeah.
Costa Rica.
Yeah.
North America,
uh-huh.
Lots of places in Europe, like Italy and Spain and all those. You want them all?
Yes, keep going.
Italy, Spain, Poland. I've been to Germany. I've been to Portugal.
Mm-hmm. Asia?
I've been to Thailand and I've been to India.
Okay. Have you been to
South
Russia?
South Africa? No.
Okay. All right.
You weren't Russian to go there, were you?
For Christ's sake.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Russian jokes in 2 episodes. How?
Right.
Jesus Christ. All right. So, Paul, what about you? What about you, Paul?
So, I've lived in, where have I lived? Switzerland, France, Spain, Canada, mm-hmm. Australia. I've not been to South America. I've been to Mexico, uh-huh. which is further South America, North America.
You've been to China?
I've been to China.
Where else?
I went to Thailand and like Indonesia and Malaysia when I was a kid, when I was about 7 or 8, so uh-huh. that doesn't really count. Then a lot of European countries. I haven't been to Africa at all.
So you two have both lived and done business and been tourists in many, many different places mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. the world. So I would say that you're probably quite good people to talk to about this subject. Do you feel like you have had quite a broad experience of different cultures?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right. You don't think so?
Well, you're sort of shielded from it, aren't you? When you're a tourist, you don't really see it. you don't know if you've done something to offend or upset people unless you've read it in a guidebook. So it's so nuanced, isn't it?
But you have at least observed...
We have observed it, yes.
...differences. And, I mean, if you've lived in another country,
yeah,
then you've experienced it, you know,
yeah,
in a more deep way. I mean, certainly France, after 15 or 7 years here, you're well aware of the differences on both sides. Mm-hmm. I think that you've probably got an objective point of view about your own culture as well. Like that, I guess that doesn't seem to be completely neutral anymore, that you've identified, having lived away from it, you can see it from another perspective now.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, I've, you know, similar story. I've either lived or been abroad to many places. I lived in Japan for a couple of years, lived in France for 4 years now, and obviously with a French girl. And I've just met thousands and thousands of people from around the world as an English teacher.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation that we're going to have now lots and lots and lots of times before with my students. So, okay, I think the three of us are probably fairly well qualified to talk about cultural stuff. Good.
I'm glad you've established that.
Yeah, have to establish.
What if we just said, actually, we've only lived really, and then would you have thrown us out? Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to have to bring somebody else in on this because you're not the expert.
I would have thrown you off the terrace. But to be honest, I only asked those. I knew those things already. I just asked them so that now my listeners know that stuff too, you know.
Just covering all the bases. That's
okay. Good. So what I've done is I've created a list of different behaviours and things.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of stuff that either I've noticed from either being abroad or meeting people from abroad, or stuff that people have told me about and things like that. So it's just a random list of different types of behaviour and different values. Okay. Now, I thought the first thing on the list would be actually the subject of your video, Paul, which is about kissing people when you meet them. The la bise, as they call it in France.
Yeah.
So you actually made a video, which, as we know, has been on YouTube and got lots of views and stuff. So what's that video about?
How annoying French people are.
It's
basically, just that it's very complicated in France to know how to say hello to somebody. Whether it's somebody you know or somebody you don't know, in which context, whether it's personal or professional, there's always some sort of kisses involved in it.
Yeah.
Whether it's... when you meet, and you know, it depends on different regions in France have different rules about which side of the face you start with, how many kisses you actually do, that's basically what that video is about.
Okay.
It's me not understanding that.
Do you still have trouble understanding the number of kisses you have to give?
I'll be honest, because I'm in Paris, I don't really spend any time outside of Paris or meet people who aren't in Paris. It's standard. Like it's become a normal thing. But I was speaking to somebody the other day actually, who was telling me again, like, oh, I saw your video. It's funny. Yeah, I see, like, a French person. It's like, oh, I was down south with my like in-laws family, and it was strange because I'd forgotten that you had to start from the other side, and it was a bit awkward and all that kind of stuff. So even they find it difficult.
How do people do it in Paris, Amber?
Two kisses, and you go right
starting
cheek.
From the
left. You go with the right, so the left cheek.
Yeah,
you kiss
like that's left cheek.
But really,
you use your left cheek on their right cheek.
I don't know. It's so instinctive. I can't even think about it.
Was it strange when you first moved here, Amber, to kiss people in the face like that?
Yes, it was.
Okay,
it was because it's long and it's sort of awkward, and I didn't really want to touch everyone's face. I mean, there was people's faces I definitely didn't want to touch, and so I just sort of say hello to everyone.
Okay.
Well, it's. I think the thing that where it's more of a where it's long is just when it's a group.
Yeah.
You know, when it's one on one, every culture that I've been to has a way of addressing one person, whether it's a handshake, a hug, whatever, the kiss, just one on one. The thing where it's really long in France is that you have to, if there's a group, you still have to do it individually with everyone.
Right.
You know, in England, we can just, if there's a group of people and you show up to a bar, you know, a bit late after work and there's 15 of you having drinks and you're the 16th person to arrive and just go, hey, everyone, how's it going? And then carry on. You don't have to individually go and say hello to everyone. So
right.
I think that was the main thing that was difficult
exactly
or different.
And it's different on all levels, and I mean lots of different people have spoken about this, but you do have to kiss everyone individually, even if there's 15 or 16 people, but they take sort of saying hello very seriously. Like if you're feeling a bit shit and you're in work and you don't say hello to someone, no one's going to care, I feel, in England. Whereas if you don't say hello to people here in France, they do take it really personally.
Yeah.
So greetings here are much more important.
Well, and people think, like I've had this situation now where as I've been doing the TV show, like in the offices where they're at, you know, I've met people in certain situations. So when I walk into the office and I see them, I'll say hi individually. But then there's other people that I've not met, and I kind of don't really know what to, you know. Sometimes I just go hi and wave from far. Like if there's three of them in a meeting room or something, yeah, and they're like hi, you know, I don't go in and say hi to them individually.
Right.
So I sometimes get the impression they think, oh, who's this pretentious dick who's
not saying hello
to
us?
Yeah, he's not saying hello to us. You know, right. What, he's got a TV show now, he thinks he can't say, you know. And it's not that, it's just that I'm very awkward, you know, and I don't know whether I should be saying hello. I don't know, it's just weird.
Right.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be that.
How is it different in the UK then, in terms of, let's say, if you go to a party or if you're going to a business place, do we kiss each other? How do we greet people in the UK then?
Shake hands, I think.
You shake hands, like even on a social level. Like if there was us, we were all hanging out and someone came along that was friends with you, maybe like a good friend with you, you might give them a hug or even a kiss, depending on your relationship. But then we would shake hands,
right,
including me, like in France, like guys kind of shake hands, you know, when they sort of might meet someone that they don't know.
They're
not ready to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I feel in the UK, like you might sort of, if there's two or three people you'd introduce us, we'd shake hands.
I reckon if a male friend of mine turned up, I would give him a hug.
Yeah.
Especially if I haven't seen him for a little while.
Yeah.
Usually we hug our male friends or a handshake.
Yeah.
If it's a female friend that I'm good friends with, it's one kiss.
Yeah.
And maybe a hug.
Yeah, one kiss is okay.
And if you don't know the people, it's for the first time you've met, then it's just handshakes.
Yeah.
But I go to French parties sometimes and I end up kissing people
that
I've never met before.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the first time you meet, you know, you get that situation, you enter the party and you have to say your name and kiss them.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have no idea who these people are. And I'm kissing them and then I'm never going to speak to them ever again in my life.
Yeah, it's funny because you kiss them and then you basically say your name. You had a joke about that.
I do.
And it's like you've touched them before you've even said your name, like you
touched
them
on the face.
Yeah with your face.
If you do a handshake, you're like, hi, my name's Paul, nice to meet you, and then you say the name before you shake,
right?
But often, like if you're saying hello to 10 people in a row in France, like you want to switch it up sometimes. Sometimes you kiss then say your name, then sometimes you say your name then kiss, like to mix it up.
Sometimes I think when there's a group situation I have to bees everyone. Yeah. I think it's easier if I just sneezed on them all and just get it all done in one go. It's the
one
same
easy
thing.
Go. Well, also in the UK, like you might, like you'd introduce yourself, you know, you shake hands, but then you wouldn't shake hands again to say goodbye. You might just be like a friendly, all right then, bye, cheerio.
Little wave.
That would be enough. You wouldn't need that. Whereas in France, you kiss when you meet and when you say goodbye and all this. Even if you just, you know, just speaking to them very quickly. And then sometimes you bees goodbye, you forget, you have a bit more of a chat, you bees them again.
Bees,
I mean, how many times
again
did you kiss Sebastian the other night?
Oh, it's just, yeah, like we were at the social event and it's like, oh, all right, he did the rounds of kisses, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. And then it was like, oh, when are you back at the social event? Oh, well, actually, and then we started another conversation.
Right.
And then 10 minutes later, it was, all right, I'm actually going to go now. And then it's once more. It's just,
have to do another round
another
of kisses.
Another bees.
Oh, my goodness. Any idea why? Why is it that in the UK we just shake hands or have a little hug or something, whereas in France everyone's kissing each other? Why is this? What's the reason for it? There must be a reason.
There must be. I mean, I don't know the reason.
You'd
maybe
have thought,
you know,
would have,
I mean,
thought I would have looked it up.
You'd have thought. You would have thought.
Being the expert.
But I mean, you must go back to some sort of tradition, like further down the line, you know, Louis XIV did this, that, or the other. But then there's a reason why these things catch on and stay and don't change. And there is a sort of, in England, we're perhaps less comfortable with, you know,
the kind of new one where, you know, people, I don't know, 30 or under, I'd say maybe 35 and under,
yeah,
in France are starting to do like the double taps, like the
I'm 39, I don't know how to do these different handshakes. But also I think it's because I still think it's because my French isn't good enough that I'm just so much more awkward when I meet people here, and I'm just terrible.
I don't think your French isn't good enough. It's just because you're English.
It's because I'm so English.
Same with me. Like
We're talking about these kind of like groovy
handshakes.
Yeah, well, it's not even a handshake. What they do here is they basically, it's like a high five. It's like a high five, but
sideways high five.
That's it. That's exactly what they do. So it's not a high five. It's like a middle five
from the side,
and they tap twice.
From the side.
Tap like that.
Yeah, tap.
And then fist bump.
It's either a tap, fist bump, or a double tap.
Okay.
No one does a double tap and a fist bump.
See, this is what happens to me. It's like we're at the Pan Am, for example, which is like the cool place where all of the young French comedians hang out. They're all these cool, trendy guys, these big YouTube stars and stuff. And we meet all these people, and I'm there like giving my hand as if I'm going to shake their hands, and they're like trying to slap my hand.
Yeah.
And then I'm like giving the fist bump, and they've still got their hand out, and it's just like I'm just like, I've got no idea what I'm doing. It's a complete disaster.
You're just playing rock, paper, scissors,
stone. I am. I'm basically playing rock, paper, scissors, stone. Like, what game is this?
That's like a great joke.
That is a good joke, yeah. I guess maybe in the UK we've got slightly different relationship to personal space.
But they do the kisses in Spain, for example. But in Spain, it's the same.
What?
As in, like, it's the same amount. It's that everyone, or the whole country, is on the same page.
Okay.
Which is why France is difficult, because it's not, no one's on the same page in France. Somebody do 3, 4, 2, 1.
How do they do it in Spain then?
It's just two.
Just two.
Two kisses, bang.
Straight. And straight you don't up. Have to do the kisses when you leave?
I think they do to say goodbye.
Do they do have? Do they have that
the
same?
I don't think they have the group thing though.
Well, exactly. That's
no, the group thing. Yeah, you do. The group thing. I mean, in my experience, is the group thing. When you introduce you group, like you individually just say hi, kind of like you do in England as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're like, if I'm introducing you to like, you know, my 15 mates in England, I'd be like, hey everyone, this is Amber, and you might go around and whatever, shake their hands or whatever. Mm-hmm. But on the way out, I think in Spain, from what I remember, it's just...
They drink more in Spain. They're plastered by the end of the night.
Yeah. It's true. They drink. So they do drink a lot.
They want to get to the bar a lot quicker as well. They're a bit more expedient.
Right, I see. Okay.
Very strange.
All right then. Well, it's interesting, and I think there may
How do they do it in Japan?
In Japan, no, certainly no physical contact. They're not kissing each other. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. What they tend to do is like a little bow.
Okay.
You know, like, yoroshiku, which is like, nice to meet you.
Okay.
Yoroshiku, and like a little bow. And it's more in the sort of facial expressions and bits of body language, but they don't go up to each other and hug and kiss, and they're not all over each other. Maybe a handshake, but otherwise it's like a little bow of the head.
That's great.
Actually, and,
if I get introduced to a group of Japanese people, like if there's 15 of them and one of them is introducing me to do I have to do the little head bow to all of them, or
no,
is it
no,
just
you probably will
group bow?
You'll probably be standing in a circle. And or something similar to that, and you'll be introduced to everyone, and you would you'd probably like bow respectfully to the group. Yeah.
Okay.
You don't need to go to every single person.
And do they all bow back to me?
Yeah, there'd be like general bobbing of heads, general sort of like, you know,
it's nice.
Hi, welcome to the company.
Okay.
You might then obviously meet people individually, yeah. But you don't have
to. If you go to a house party, if you go to a bar or something like that.
No. It's not all individual greetings.
Group.
It's
just
like
group
a kind of group thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nico had a difficult bees moment the other day.
Oh, yeah.
We bumped into our friends who've just had a baby, and so we were like, oh, hello, and we bees them, and the mum was there, her or his mum was there. And Nico had already gone and said hello. I was with Hugo, and then I went over and I was like, hello, and I beesed everyone. Juliet, Gaetan, and the mum. And then we were talking about it afterwards. Nico said, oh, you know what? I didn't know what to do, whether I should bees the mum or not. And so I didn't. And then I felt a bit rude because then you came over and you just naturally beesed everyone. Oh, it's a nightmare, isn't it? Even for French people.
That's incredible.
To bees or not to bees.
Because he didn't want to be rude by being too familiar and beesing her. But then he didn't bees her. And then he felt rude because I did bees her.
Oh, my God.
There was no protocol.
What a bloody nightmare.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've got a whole list of these things.
Let's move through them. Yes.
So the next one is just, again, randomly in my list, is looking people in the eye, making eye contact.
Mm.
What do you think about that? I mean, in our culture, that's pretty normal to give people eye contact.
Yeah.
You know, when you shake a hand, you've got to give the eye contact, a good firm grip of the hand when you give a handshake.
Who doesn't make eye contact?
Some cultures, it's a bit rude, depending on the status of the person you're talking to make eye contact with a person. For example, we're talking about Japan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They typically say that in Japan, it's seen as inappropriate to make too much eye contact. Whereas in the UK and in America, for example, making eye contact is considered to be really important.
Mm.
And if you, for example, if you meet your boss or the CEO of your company and you shake his hand, then, you know, you should, you know, make eye contact. If you met, whoever the CEO of, what's his name now?
Tim Cook.
You'd be like, hi, Tim. You'd give him a good look in the eye and you'd shake his hand, good firm grip. Eye contact.
Yeah.
I think that in Japan, unless it's like a, you know, a very modern sort of international company, I think that instead you would not really make a lot of eye contact, because if you did, then it would be considered rude to be challenging someone
right.
who's at a higher status than you, and that you tend to be a bit more deferential to the person by not looking them in the eye. And, you know, that's why, for example,
bowing...
But then
if you're speaking to them, so you say the initial introduction's done, like, yeah, you shake in the eye contact, but then afterwards when you're speaking or listening to the person, is that...
In Japan?
Yeah.
Again, I think, if it's a higher status person, I think it's more common to listen in a more respectful manner without making a lot of eye contact. You make occasional eye contact to show you're listening and stuff, but a lot of the time you're not looking the person directly in the eye when they're talking. You're sort of listening and nodding your head or looking down and then looking up occasionally. But in the UK, it's like important to make strong eye contact, look away a little bit, more eye contact, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something we don't think about.
No, not really.
But from the Japanese point of view, it does make sense, really, to me.
It's a bit animal, isn't it?
I'm paranoid now.
That you don't want to look people in the eye. But it's okay for us, because if we go to Japan, they understand that we're not Japanese. Okay. And
we have different rules. People know that.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. When it's a big thing like that, like two big cultures, like Japan and England, who in some ways are similar, you know, and in some ways are completely different, when the other makes a sort of important faux pas, you know, when they do something which is really wrong, like eye contact, like let's say I went to Japan and I was making loads of eye contact thinking I was being really friendly and everyone's like, rude bitch, but they're not going to tell
she's so scary, she's so aggressive,
loony. Exactly, but it's okay because they know I'm foreign, so they're making that kind of allowance. The problem is when I think you're doing something rude and you don't even realize it, because the cultures are so close and the nuance is so sort of slight,
yes,
that without realizing it you've sort of ruffled feathers, you've made people feel uncomfortable.
Didn't you have a thing with that, with the you might have told the story before in the podcast with the shoes, going to one of friends and you took shoes off, or you didn't take shoes off, or something.
I still don't
know. Is
that
on your list?
I still don't know.
I still don't know if that's a French problem or if that's just my wife who's just got a weird thing about that. I don't know. But we went to a dinner party and it was like some good friends, like really good close friends, and we were like all relaxed, and I was hot, you know, and uncomfortable. I took my shoes off. I was like sitting on the floor with my back to the sofa and I was like, I'm going to take my shoes off. Took my shoes off. My wife was like, put your shoes on. What? Hey, man, it's all right. It's all cool. Relax. Chill out, man. Put your shoes on. And then afterwards in the taxi, she's like, don't take your shoes off like that. I was like, what? Why?
Hold on.
It's all right.
Well, I went to a dinner party the other day and it was really hot. It was like 39 degrees or no, 29 degrees. It was really hot. No, it was really hot. It was nearly 40 degrees in Paris. I went to a dinner party and Nico took off his T-shirt.
What?
In the house?
Yeah, at dinner. And I was like,
put
your T-shirt on.
And then he started to trend because the other...
Wait a minute. He was naked? Semi-naked?
He was toss anew. He had no T-shirt.
This is in someone's apartment.
Good friends and everything. We're having dinner. But I was like, you cannot eat dinner without a T-shirt on.
Oh, my goodness.
But then the other dark guys did it too. So The other guys. The other guys, they did it too. So you clearly could. They all took off their T-shirts.
But the thing is that what you were talking about is that grey area where the cultures are actually very similar.
Yeah.
And then there are little things you don't realise, and people are not going to let you off. Because
you're not different.
Because you're not different. Yeah. Like in Japan, if I make a cultural faux pas, people are going to forgive me because I'm obviously different. You know?
If you go to Thailand and you point at something, which apparently is really rude.
With your foot.
With anything, with your finger or your foot.
Oh, really?
They don't mind. They just think foreign person.
Foreign person, okay. Mm. So I think that in France, I'm guilty of this a lot, that I probably do all sorts of terrible social mistakes without realising it, and I probably alienate myself from the French community all the time by making various mistakes. I think one of the things I often do is that I put myself in a weak position in France, whereas in the UK, we do that in order to be nice. For example, if you are, let's say, complaining about something, you might be like, you know, sorry to bother you about this, and, you know, I know you're just doing your job, but... I just wanted to say that I bought this bread and I think I might have been overcharged. You charged me for cheese and it's actually bread. So sorry to, you know, disturb you. But is there any chance that maybe you could just fix that for me? In France, if you do that, they'd be like, you pathetic cretin. You make yourself in a weak position.
Yeah.
In the UK, we do that in order to avoid antagonizing the person, to try and make things smooth and to be nice and avoid being aggressive. Whereas in France, you have to be strong and tough and kind of formal at the beginning. You need to lay your cards on the table and say, I bought this bread here and you charged me for cheese and it's far too expensive. I expect to be given a refund.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will respect you for it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't smile, you know, just be serious and not happy and complain, and they'll respect you for it, and you'll get your refund and it'll be all right. And if you say, sorry, I think you didn't, then they will have no respect for you. They'll just ignore you. And then you'll get, you know, someone will jump ahead of you in the queue.
Yeah.
And then
you'll be forgotten.
So I'm sure I'm sort of doing that kind of thing all the time. So that was looking people in the eye.
Okay.
So actually, that kind of leads us on, that the thing I just said there leads us on to this point, which is about indirectness, diplomacy, and politeness.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in the way that we communicate, indirectness and politeness and diplomacy versus directness, straightness, and clarity.
Mm.
So the indirectness, diplomacy, or politeness could be described as being nice and diplomatic, but also could be described as being hypocritical.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. And then the directness, straightness, and clarity could be considered being straightforward and honest, but also could be considered to be rude and obnoxious. Right. So, you know, certain cultures tend to be direct when they're giving negative feedback, and other cultures tend to be indirect when they're giving negative feedback. And I think there's a lot of there are a lot of problems there, especially between English and French.
Yeah.
I think that we
Germans.
And German as well, really. So do you have anything to say about this? For example, if you have a negative thing to say, let's say in the workplace, if you've got some negative feedback to give, I think in English culture, we would probably sweeten the thing. We'd sugarcoat the negative thing and say something that sounds kind of nice, but embedded within it is a negative statement. And if you're from a direct culture, you might not notice. Mm. You might just think, oh, they're being really nice to me. And then when you realize that that was actually a negative comment, then you'll feel betrayed, like this hypocritical, two-faced person.
Yeah.
You know, so what do you think? Got any thoughts on this? Well,
Nico's a bit like this because he's really straightforward. You know, he'll really just say what he thinks and what he means. And he expects other people to be the same.
Yeah.
And so he can't hear necessarily what's being said, what's not being said.
He can't read between the lines.
He can't read between the lines. So, and especially, you know, someone will say something and he'll be like, okay, they want this. I'm like, no, that's exactly what they don't want. You're not listening to what they're not saying.
Yep.
And so he's not good at that. But he's very good at being direct and explaining. Like, our friend came around the other day. My friend, and he just got completely drunk. He turned up at 5 PM and was still there at 2. Just completely drunk, like on his own. It was Monday night, and at 1 o'clock Nico was like, right, I'm tired, I'm going to bed, good night. And I just could not get him to leave. And then like over an hour later, I was like, so tired, and I've got to get up at 7 o'clock, and I was like, I'm really tired. But by this point he was so drunk, I did basically throw him out, but I had to wait another whole hour, even though I'd been yawning since about midnight.
Oh no.
Indirect.
So Nico,
good. His directness, fantastic, can be really useful. He didn't hurt anyone's feelings. Said, I'm tired, I'm going to bed. I couldn't do it.
I
did that the other day.
What?
Turned up, got drunk.
No, it's the opposite. It was me. We were filming on Tuesday, so I got up at 6 or 5:30 or whatever to go film, and we were filming the whole day. And then we were knackered. We had a beer afterwards.
Yeah.
And then I met Addy just around here at the place, the Dépanneur.
The Dépanneur.
Yeah.
It's a cool burger place.
Yeah. And we met one of Addy's friends there who just recently broke up, whatever. So we were chatting and it was all going fine. You know, we were having a drink and I was giving my man's opinion of the situation of the breakup and all this kind of stuff. And at some stage they started talking about law stuff.
Ugh.
And I guess the fatigue of the day caught up to me, and I was just like, whoa. So then I went to the toilet to try and wake up a bit.
Yes.
Came back, and it was probably one of the only times that I was just like, sorry, I'm going. I'm tired.
I have to go.
So I just left. I left Addy with her mate there, and they talked, and I was kind of proud. I was like,
Felt amazing.
Yeah, but it took me a while to muster up, because Addy was talking, and there was no break in the conversation for me to be like,
So how did you actually say it? It was in French, I suppose.
Yeah, so they were talking, and I was waiting for a pause, and I just said, sorry, I've got to go because I've got to get up like in the morning. I'm really tired. And before I finished a sentence, like Addie was like, yeah. Like she knew that I was
tired.
They didn't mind at all.
So it was difficult, but you just went for the directness of like, I'm leaving because I have to be up. Instead, in England, you'd be like, what would have been the English way of doing that then?
You'd have just stayed till you fell asleep on the table.
I'd have stayed until she... That's normally what happens, is right. I stay until she goes, I want to go home. And right. then I'm like, oh, she wants to go home.
Right. Once I was really sick. I had a hangover, but I was also really, really, really ill. And I was meant to be having dinner with a friend, really good friend, also English. And I just couldn't. I felt so awful. But I couldn't tell her that I couldn't come. I felt so racked with guilt and shame. And Nico had to phone her up and say, Amber's not well. She can't come. Like my dad or something. I thought, why am I so incapable of telling someone straight, being straightforward?
We can't say no. That's the thing.
Yeah, we're not in case of upsetting.
Yeah, we don't want to upset people. And we just, I don't know why we're so averse to saying no.
It's very hard.
But it's really impossible. And this is something I have with my wife. We talk about this kind of thing all the time. Not with me, because, you know, we know each other well enough for it not to be an issue. But certainly when we're dealing with other people, like often when she's, you know, sending emails to my family.
Would you like to come to this? No.
No. not her saying no. It's that reading my parents' messages. So we're always in email, email correspondence, the two of us and my parents. And so, you know, for example, my wife will sort of suggest something like, you know, let's go and visit Warwick Castle on Saturday. And I know my parents don't want to visit Warwick Castle. They've been and they just want to sit and have lunch at home with us and talk to us. That's all they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my wife's like, let's do this, let's do that. And it's really interesting for me to reading the message. And my wife's like, hey, I think we're going to go to Warwick Castle. And I'm like, let me read the message. No, we're not going to Warwick Castle.
Because your parents have replied something.
My parents have said, basically, yeah, that could be good. That could be good, you know, but blah, blah, blah. We were thinking blah, blah, blah. That could be good, but we were thinking blah, 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 which means we definitely don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and every time she gets it wrong, she doesn't understand that my parents don't say, no, we don't want to go to Warwick Castle. Instead, they say,
that's a good idea.
Warwick Castle idea. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what I've learned is that, and this is from talking to not just my wife about this, but also from talking to many students in France and stuff about communication differences, is that obviously both sides think that they're right. You know, in the UK, with our indirectness with negative things, we think that we are being nice, and we think that we've got the right intentions.
Do we? Because we've all suffered from this.
No, well, we have, but a lot of people who haven't come into contact with the other culture as much as us don't think about it. And the first step is to, first of all, not even realize that you're doing anything different or weird. And the second step is, once it's been challenged, to sort of defend the position because it's normal. And then the third one is when you start to question it and stuff like that. But I think most people would people who communicate like that would assume that they're being nice, and it's a question of being positive and diplomatic and stuff like that. Whereas from the French point of view, they consider it to be sneaky and underhanded and two-faced and hypocritical as well. Hypocritical is the word that's used. They think that we are hypocrites when we don't say straight up what we mean when we have something negative to say. I think there's something on both sides. I think both sides have got a point.
We used to do a whole training, like a 3-hour training session on this at Apple.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
About like giving negative feedback and stuff like that. And
yeah.
It was a really interesting topic. We used to talk for hours about it. And
Americans are even different.
Yes, I think.
Yeah, it boiled down to like, we don't give a shit what your cultures do. This is how we're going to do it at Apple. Mm-hmm. In a sense of like, we get that you all do it different. We get that you guys say it more like it is. You guys don't, blah, blah, blah. Let's do this system where you're taking emotions out of it and it's all based, it was like, basically the thing was like the two things that you talk about as the behavior that you saw and then the impact that it had on whatever it was. So it was always like, you couldn't just say to somebody, you know, I think you're being,
you seem aggressive.
Disconnected. You right. seem like not in it today, you know, yeah. like you don't seem to be, whatever. Mm. Yeah. And it was like, well, what does that mean? In different cultures, that means different things. You know, and the you know, one of the classic examples is like somebody leaning on a desk or something like that.
Right.
You know, and in some cultures, that would, in some people might see that as negative. Some people might see it as positive. Oh, you're leaning on a desk. You're kind of being cool. You're being open
relaxed.
And welcoming. Yeah. Whereas some other places it could be. So it's just like talk about the behavior and the impact. The behavior being you're leaning on the desk. The impact could be that people see it negatively, could be see it positively. Like
right.
the behavior in itself isn't a positive or negative thing. Like
right.
you leaning on a desk, you chewing gum, you whatever, there's no positive or that's not, it's so, the impact is positive or negative.
There's no implicit positive or negative about any particular behavior. It's more about the way in which it
exactly,
impacts
yeah.
on people.
And it was just to be like, hey, just so you know, that could have a potential impact. Like,
yeah.
it could be seen negatively, it could be seen positively.
Right.
I'm not saying it's one or the other, it's just...
Yeah.
So it was just to try and take the subjectivity out of it.
Like, the way, for example, like the way you just went under the table and did a poo on the floor,
yeah.
you know, that the waiting
exactly.
staff might find that a bit inappropriate.
But that
exactly.
is, like, parenting books do often talk about, when you talk to children, you shouldn't say, oh, that's good or that's bad.
Yeah.
You know, you're meant to describe what they're doing. You know, when you do this,
yeah.
you know, so it's a bit like that.
Yeah, it's
taking out that subjective emotional
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, and showing them the consequence of the actions rather than just dictating what's good and bad.
Yeah.
Well, you're understanding, they're sort of understanding, it, giving them a heads up, like, it's this thing that you did specifically
yeah.
made me react like this. Then they can react to,
yeah.
rather than just your emotion, you're like this. They
yeah.
can say, oh, well, that thing I did, actually, I did it because of this.
Yeah.
You find resolution,
and we
possibly
have,
easier.
The whole, because we had a, there was basically like a grid that we had, you know, which had like the kind of like the different types of feedback you might hear. And there was like positive, negative, you know, general or specific or whatever. And people always used to, you know, it was fun because it was always like, oh, I don't like calling it negative. I like calling it constructive.
Yeah.
And we was like, I was just to be like, yeah, good. So here's the problem with that. You can't have a constructive impact. The impact of the behavior you had is either positive or negative. There's
right.
no such thing as a constructive impact.
Yes.
It's the feedback's constructive because you're helping them get better as a person, or you're helping them get, you know, do something. The feedback itself is constructive, but the impact isn't.
The behavior in the first instance is either positive or negative in its impact.
In its impact, yeah.
You can't have constructive...
Exactly. And constructive is positive and negative. Because I could say to you, oh, you know, if I was talking about, like, I don't know, jokes, I was like, oh, this
yeah.
joke is really funny in this bit. That's still constructive feedback because it's helping you in a
right.
constructive way.
Yeah.
But if I said they're not laughing at this point, it's equally constructive. So
the word constructive is not an adequate replacement for the word negative.
No, because...
And in fact, someone who wants to use the word constructive instead of negative is just being... Let's say indirect. They just don't want to use the word negative.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Because
exactly.
they're averse to negativity,
exactly.
which maybe is a criticism that could be leveled at the typical sort of English person
mm-hmm.
who can't
yeah.
say mm-hmm. something negative. I think that. I wonder why we are slightly negative averse. And I think it. Yeah, go on.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, there is something to be said about that sort of hypocriticalness, because there's always a flip side to the coin, you know.
Mm.
Well, no matter what quality someone has, there's always something that balances it in a negative way. And that sense of reading between the lines, of perhaps saying things behind people's back, of, you know, that it does breed a sort of culture which people are very good at reading between the lines, where
right.
you can have that sort of very sarcastic humour and everyone will understand instantly. You can be really dry.
Mm.
It does create the absurd. Like, the sort of flip side of that is that they're exceptionally good at that kind of communication.
Right.
And understanding it and reading it. And they're good at reading people too. And maybe English people are good at reading a sort of situation which is a bit more delicate.
Because
they have, you know, been...
And also
honed.
Because the things are not being explicitly said.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need them to be explicitly said because we're able to read them
in.
All.
Yeah.
Okay, so within that context, it makes total sense to use these slightly more diplomatic and indirect approaches because everyone's able to understand what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Whereas if you take someone from outside of that culture, let's say from a direct culture, like French or German maybe.
The Germans.
Then to them it's going to seem like, oh my God, I can't believe these people are being so two-handed. Mm. Is it two-handed?
Two-faced.
Two-faced.
Because it comes down to sort of how you're... When people are very direct to us... It can feel rude and it can hurt our sensitive feelings. But I have a very good German friend and I think she also feels hurt when perhaps, you know, she, like you said, you know, she thought everything was going fine and actually, oh no, there was some sort of veiled criticism and it sort of seems more stinging because it wasn't sort of in the open, whereas perhaps we were trying to say something kinder and not have it in the open. So it kind of comes back to how people's feelings are being hurt.
Right.
Sensitive.
Yes, okay. Mm. So perhaps we're just more sensitive to reading between the lines in our culture, and that's why perhaps we are able to use this slightly more complicated language. And, you know, it's what's good to one person is going to be negative to another person, isn't it? That although we might be labelled as being hypocritical in our communication style, equally you could say that a sort of direct communication style is sort of a bit unsophisticated and a bit rude and a bit blunt and all those sorts of things. So I guess what we have to do is sort of, to an extent, take that Apple approach, which is to try to just find a through line, which is, you know, in which you're aware of all these things. And also I think it's worth just paying attention to the way that you're communicating with people and just trying different approaches. And also, I don't know, to an extent, I think that we need to be prepared, or certainly Anglophones need to be prepared, to be a bit more direct in the way that they give negative feedback.
Oh yeah.
And everyone else needs to just think about that actually there's maybe a more complicated message going on than the one that you saw. You need to just be a bit more sensitive to people's feelings. So that was conflict versus non-conflict and directness and indirectness and stuff like that. Loads of things to say there. Next one on my random list is just simply this: smiling in public. Smiling at public and smiling at strangers and things in public. Does that strike you as being odd at all?
Yes.
Really? Says Amber in a very serious voice.
Well, there's a few different things. There's smiling in a city, even in London. I think it's pretty weird. Smiling in a big city, you know, in cities people tend to be a bit more separate anyway. And then smiling as a lady in a city, you are asking for trouble.
Really?
I sometimes listen to a humorous podcast as I'm walking around, and I do deliberately, definitely not make any eye contact, because the minute you smile, you open up and you almost want to share it, like, I'm listening to something hilarious. And you smile, you make eye contact, it is going to be with a freak. They're going to try and come and get in your space and have a talk to you or make some sort of comment. So smiling, got to be careful. But then in a small town, country side, have a smile.
You smile at people, you walk past. If you're walking your dog, you might say, morning.
No, to be honest, no, I wouldn't. But really? No, I wouldn't. I don't think I'd smile.
You're an unfriendly city type, though, Amber, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. It feels unnatural to smile at someone you don't... I don't know.
Bear in mind, you have been living in Paris for 15 years.
Yeah.
Do you think that...
That's a lot to do with it. Really? Well, whose joke
smiles?
Is that? It's... I think it's Urban's joke. It's like, yeah, if you go to Paris... And somebody smiles at you, run.
Yeah.
Run as far as you can, because it's definitely not a normal smile. They're not smiling at you. I mean, it's obviously over-exaggerated, but there is some truth to it. I can't deal with... The thing that drives me nuts with this place is just the amount of strangers that just come up to you and want to talk. Whether it's to ask you for money, whether it's genuinely to ask you for something else, whatever it is, it drives me nuts. I just hate... I don't want... contact with people.
And so how does that relate to smiling?
Well, I think if you... Like, there's been times where... there's just something for some reason. I don't know. There's like a connection that you have with somebody. Like, I don't know. If you're in the metro or you're somewhere public, and it's happened to me a couple of times where I've just smiled. I don't know. Something's made me smile at somebody that I'm looking at, or vice versa. And we both smile and that's it. And it's normal. And that's it.
Okay.
But this time... that doesn't happen. It's not like I'm constantly smiling at everyone. It's just
I think it's rather than just being like on the train smiling for no reason. I think it's more like, you know, let's say you're in a shop and you're asking a question, or you're doing, you know, you're interacting with someone.
Oh.
And I guess in some cultures you're more likely to use a smile at certain points in that interaction than in others.
Yeah, in America.
in America, for example, yeah, exactly. It's very important to be quite smiley.
Like Australia.
You see it on television in America, you know, when you see these interviews. And I've seen this a few times where there's a guest on a show, on a news show, for example, a chat show or something, and the guest is on the screen, but they don't realise that they are on the screen yet. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So before the interview starts, the guest is shown on the screen. They've got a neutral face. And then when the host starts to introduce, so we're with us today is Paul Taylor. And then Paul would suddenly put on this fake smile. Yeah. Because he thinks that suddenly then he's being on the camera. So I think in America, there's more of an emphasis on
it's
being...
Because they've got great mouths.
They've got great teeth.
They've got
great
good teeth.
Great they mouths. Have. But also it's about being positive and putting on a sort of... I think there's a part of American culture, isn't it, to be sort of positive and outgoing.
We're
and
completely the opposite.
We're quite negative.
A smile is sort of a little bit vulnerable. So depending on your status and your physicality, smiling is taken differently. If I smile, I can't make it 5 yards down the street because people stop to ask me directions or hassle you for various things. Like, I'm short.
Well, especially as a female as well.
You're a lady and, you know, you're sort of approachable. I mean, I always get asked for directions and I think it's because, I don't know, I'm close to the ground or something.
And you're a tour guide.
No, I don't know what it is. But, you know, if you're kind of giving out a positive signal, you're like inviting people in. It's
it's
tough. Whereas if a big guy is walking around smiling, you're not going to, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I get stopped. Like, there's times where I get stopped. I always, for some reason, I'd be walking with other people down the street, but the people will come to me to be like, yeah, give me some money. I don't know. You just, if you've got a face on you, like, you don't want to be spoken to, then I think people kind of get that vibe. Yeah.
People don't talk to me. In
they
the
not?
Street, no.
They
I
not?
Think I'm giving off a general atmosphere of like, don't talk to me, I can't speak the language. Just, I'm not here. I'm
hoping the more I get known by the general public, the less people will come up to me.
No, it's going to be the other way around, Paul.
Of course,
because you're going to be famous because you're going to be on television a lot, and
but I think a lot of people are going to be not. I think a lot of people are intimidated by that as well.
Nah.
Definitely.
Some people are going to come and talk to you.
We've been at a table with Addie, and there's been a famous person, and she's frozen. There's no way she'd go up and be like, "Hi, I really like." No one does that.
Yeah, but there more people would do that to a famous person than to a
stranger.
Person.
Obviously,
be like, "Hi, I don't know who you are. I've never met you before, but can I just talk to you for no reason?"
Mm. Yeah.
Of course, they wouldn't do that.
Fair enough.
But I'm just thinking about smiling, for example, when...
Smiling.
If, let's say, imagine...
Well, did you have a specific...
Well, yeah, I've got an example.
Right, that's what...
Imagine this situation. I'm in London, and it's day one of a four-week English course, and all of the students are in the room, and they're all from everywhere. They're all from different countries. I've got Russians. They were there first. they were in a hurry. They were in a hurry to be there. So the Russians obviously got in the door first, because they were very quick. Oh. Are we late? No, don't worry, you're fine.
There was no need to rush.
Yeah. And then there's Japanese and Korean and Turkish people and Italians and Brazilians and Spanish and French and everyone. German people.
We get it, everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
Yeah,
there. Okay. Saudi Arabian people, Iranian people. And so I have to then give the day one speech where I'm like, hello, welcome to the course. You know, this is your general English course, blah, 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 blah. And I, you know, I normally would talk for about 10 minutes at the beginning of the
which
thing.
Really means half an hour.
Yeah. And I'm you know, looking around the room, and being me, obviously, sometimes I'm, you know, yep. I'm trying to like break the ice, trying to create the right atmosphere, trying to be nice, trying to be friendly. And I kind of often would think, what are these people thinking about me? What's their first impression of this person who is sort of like, and honestly, I would often kind of make fairly ironic, sarcastic jokes without flagging them up to be obvious. It would be like making these sort of humorous comments and things like that, and I would just often think, what do these people think? And I wonder what they think if I'm smiling. Do they not I'm sure that some of them, if they'd seen me smiling, they would have not taken me seriously or whatever, you know. The point is, I think that's just an illustration, that story of talking to all my students on day one, of how a smile can mean a different thing to different people. Now, I don't mean to suggest that in France, for example, nobody smiles ever, or that they're going to think you're an idiot if you do smile. But I just think that it's it does make a difference sometimes if you approach it with a smile or not. But you told me before about how when you have to make a complaint, what you do is you prepare all of your arguments in advance.
Yeah, I prepare the fuck you argument, and then
you prepare the whole fuck you argument. So when you go to make a complaint, are you nice and smiley and friendly?
To start with, yeah.
You are?
And then if I ever get any resistance, sometimes I can get like super angry. There's only a couple of times that's happened, but yeah. The thing that was interesting, like, I think a smile is one of those things that's like, I don't know, an evolutionary thing. You know, like animals when they bark at each other or they growl at each other. Like a smile, I think, I'm trying to think of the westernized man meeting the guy in the tribe that's never met anyone outside the tribe and going in with the smile, like they know that they're on the same page. I think it's just one of those things.
Okay.
I don't think anyone would see somebody smiling and go, this is gonna end badly.
I suppose so, yeah. But you see, just the point I'm making about in some cultures, they might see a smile as being a sign of weakness in that you're being too nice. Mm. Like that's how I always think about it in France. That I just from experience,
yeah,
that
I never thought about it.
If you're too nice and you're too sort of pleasant and friendly, that they don't take you seriously, and therefore they're not going to deal with your complaint properly. Now, I'll give you an example. I told you before, didn't I, that I bought some bread and that they weighed it incorrectly. Mm. That actually happened to me today, this morning, right? Well, yesterday I bought the bread and this morning I had to take it back to the shop, right? So what happened was, right, I went to the shop yesterday, did some food shopping. And while I was doing the food shopping, I also bought some bread, okay? And so I bought a piece of pain complet. That's what they call it. It's like sort of healthy bread. Healthy bread in English. And
brown bread.
Now, first of all, right, the girl behind the counter was obviously not interested in serving me. So I stood there for about a minute looking at my hands, trying to pretend to be interested in the cheese behind the counter. I've got lots of types of cheese, waiting for her.
What kind of shop was this?
It's Bio Cibon up the road. Okay. It's like the organic shop up the road.
I was like, that doesn't sound like a normal supermarket to me.
It was the Bio shop, the organic shop.
I know what you mean. We've got one of those.
I was there at the counter where they sell bread and cheese, and I was like standing there. The girl was standing there, and I went up, and this is how English I am. I went up, and I just waited for her to say, "Hello, sir, how can I help you?" Which is not what you do in France. So I stood there for a minute, like, I'll just pretend to be interested in the cheese. Oh, nice cheeses here. I live a ridiculous life. I mean, I'm a complete disaster. Okay. So I was like, I'll pretend to look at the cheese while I waited for her. And I waited a bit more and I looked at her and nothing. And then I realized, she's going to let me stay here. She just thinks I want to stand here for no reason. That's clearly what's going on in her mind. She's thinking, he's just chosen in the middle of his shopping trip to just stand in front of me and look at cheese for no reason with no intention of buying them. So then I had to say bonjour like that. And I can't even do bonjour properly because I'm sure I do it. It sounds sarcastic or it sounds wrong or it sounds weak or something like bonjour. I can't do it properly. And so then I finally got her attention with this terrible English bonjour. And I think that subconsciously, at least, because I didn't do it right, subconsciously she was like, I'm going to do this all wrong. So I said, some healthy bread, please, in French. And she was like, some healthy bread, okay. And she cut off some healthy bread from the... She's like, first of all, she was like, this much? And I was like, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, fine. That is some healthy bread. I'll have it. So she went and she cut it. And then she brought it back and it was like a massive piece. It was the width that I'd chosen, but she'd gone the full length of this piece of bread. So it was a massive chunk of bread. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. Thinking, we like bread. I'll eat the bread. Fine. Toast for breakfast, lunch and dinner. And so what I didn't realize, though, is that when she weighed the bread, she printed the ticket by measuring it as cheese. She'd put it through the thing as blue cheese without me realizing. It was a €15.44 piece of bread. It's like if bread was made of gold, it would have been cheaper than this. And it went into my basket and I bought everything else and I didn't realize, you know, that there was this €15 loaf of bread in there. And then I, you know, came home happily after doing the shopping. And then my wife in the evening, she was like, she saw the bread with a sticker on it. She was like, wait a minute. Did you pay €15 for this bread? I was like, oh, yes, yes. Oh, sorry. Because I am, as we've established, Mr. Bean in Paris. Oh, sorry.
That should be the title of your one-man show.
Mr. Bean in Paris. So then I was like, oh, God. And she's like, you're going to have to get this, you know. You're going to have to take it back. And so I went this morning. I was like, right, I'm going to take this bread back and I'm going to get a bloody refund. And I thought, I'm not going to go with the English Mr. Bean approach. I'm going to be all French and I'm going to take the French approach. So I was like, right, no nonsense. And I marched up the road with the bread under my arm and the receipt in my hand. And I went in. And
were you not running through in your head the conversation?
Yes, yeah. I was. I was like, bonjour.
Spare us.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. It's embarrassing. my French is not very good. Sometimes it's okay. When I'm stressed out, it's appalling.
Yeah.
It's not very good. I mean,
it's hard. No, it's hard. It's so hard.
It's difficult. I mustered up the courage, and I went in there and I did the whole thing in the French way. And I was very straightforward. I said, I bought this healthy bread from you, but you charged me for cheese. And it's obviously too expensive. Give me a refund. Good day. And she was like, yes, sir. Sorry, sir. Certainly, sir. I'll give you a refund for everything. In fact, I'll give you the bread for free.
Really?
Yeah, she gave me the bread free. Aww. Everything worked out fine. She apologized. It was the same girl.
Same girl?
Yeah, she apologized to me. And I came back with a smile on my face. And I said to my wife, not only did I get the right change, but they gave me the bread free. Oh. Thank you very much.
But you can still hear them laughing at me all the way from here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's my point. Maybe... there's a right way and a wrong way to do things in certain cultures. It's like a key. You need the right key to open the door.
I've never found smiling and doing it the wrong way. Smiling it and doing that way, like to have a...
Well, I think that it's just me uniquely in this situation. Yeah. It's just I'm just so appalling and unconfident.
It's the non-confidence. Because when you are confident, I mean, you could go in there, you know, balancing on your nose. But if you do it with style and confidence, people just respond to that as well.
Confidence is like the lifeblood of any communication situation. If you do it with confidence, then basically you're going to be all right. But if you kind of go into a situation and you're like half-hearted, then don't. It's a bit like I don't know if you ever did this as a kid, but grabbing a nettle with your hand. You know what I mean? Yeah. A nettle is one of those leaves that stings your hand if you touch it. But if you grab it confidently with your hand, it doesn't sting you.
What?
Yes, it's true. You didn't grow up in the country, did you?
I grew up in London.
Right, exactly. What? Well, I grew up in the country part of my life.
And if you grab a nettle,
if you grab a nettle quickly like that in the palm of your hand, it does not sting you.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so if you grab a nettle quickly, then it doesn't sting you. Similarly, if you engage in an act of communication with a certain level of confidence and you kind of, you know, do it properly, then you'll be all right.
That's a metaphor for life.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I've got so many other things on this list, but we don't have time.
We don't. I've got to go and pick up the pooper.
You do. You've got to go and pick up your boy and try and make sure he never poops under a restaurant table again.
Yeah, or any table.
Indeed. Do you two have anything else to say to the people of the world before you disappear?
No.
That's it.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks for inviting us over.
And, pleasure.
We'll
look forward to the next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. All right then. Thanks very much, you two. Thanks very much to our neighbours who've been listening to the entire thing. The guy who was sitting on his...
Yeah, but that was an episode.
That was the previous episode. Yeah, there was a man's...
We didn't talk about the surroundings this one. Are you going to release these both at the same time?
I'll release this one after the previous one, so...
Yeah, but I mean, is it going to be like a week after?
Probably.
Right, so then they won't...
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
All of that is contextual information that you
would have listened to a week ago, maybe, or in the previous episode.
That also, in fact, you know what? That includes the story of your son doing a poo under a table. If they haven't listened to the previous episode, they won't know anything about that. They'll be like, why are they talking about doing a poo under a table? That's not normal in any culture, is it?
True.
All right, then. Dear. Well, thanks very much for listening. Don't forget to visit the website where you'll find stuff there and subscribe to the email list and check out my sponsors and all that sort of thing. Thank you very much for listening. Speak to you again soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Thank you. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.